Here's what we see happening over and over again with scaling businesses. You start nice and lean, a small, nimble team that gets things done.
Then suddenly something starts selling well and you're scaling faster than expected.
Those small things that were manageable before, like customer support requests, start piling up. So naturally, you hire an affordable team member to help.
Then you scale some more, hire another inexpensive resource, then another and another.
Before you know it, you've got a team of people.
You have no idea what half of them are doing.
You become the bottleneck, reviewing everything, and you're spending more time managing people than growing your business.
You've created a juggernaut that's getting bigger by the day, and your solution is just throwing more resources at the symptoms instead of solving the problems.
It's the task ticker trap. And it's costing businesses like yours thousands in wasted resources and countless missed bedtime stories.
In today's episode, we're breaking down exactly how to avoid this trap and what to do if you're already caught in it. But first, let's be real about how this episode actually started.
God, okay. So here's how we start our podcast, is that we've just been talking for an hour and we didn't hit record.
And we didn't hit record. Tech support! Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, could shoot myself in the head right now.
Anyway. Like the rookiest mistake ever.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so let's recap what we just spoke about for the last feels like hour. So why did we start this?
So we have a really good Telegram chat that we chat together on Telegram all day because we are on multiple teams together. Yeah. And so the stuff that we talk about in Telegram is gold. And we often say, I do this with my business besties as well. That should be a podcast episode.
So now it's a podcast episode.
So now we're trying to do a podcast and then we forgot to hit record. So here we are.
Yeah. So Flip, we've been talking about this forever. Chanel and I, let's do a quick backstory. So we've been working together for, we did the math earlier and it was like 10 years-ish.
Yeah, 10 years.
So I was at school with Chanel's stepsister.
Yeah.
From standard 7 or grade 9. And so we knew each other and we were like Facebook buddies and stuff while we were in different parts of the world. And then you were in Turks and Caicos and then came back to South Africa about 10 years ago, and that's when we kind of really got serious about working together and to where we are today, which is basically business besties.
Back then we were building WordPress designs for people. I had a few clients that I was actually running a social media agency, and then they needed websites and we started working together like that, creating beautiful brands and websites together. And now we work much more holistically with people who are usually making between 500,000 and getting up to $1 million a year in revenue. It's around that, it seems to be a lot of people around the 800,000 mark. So it's like they've done the six figure, multi six figure, and then they're getting up to that figure. And now they need, like I call it a seven figure systems audit that we've done together for people. So I come in as a COO, like fractional COO, so I can work in more than one business at a time. And then I bring my team with me, or sometimes Chantel's on a team and I come and join, or I'm on a team and she comes and joins. So we're helping people create their teams, rehauling their systems. And then the thing is, we have branding and website experience. We have such a massive amount of experience between the two of us.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you didn't mention your background before we started working together with clients. I mean, you were like high-end photography and retouching, incredible photographer, designer, design art, you know, so we've got that in common.
Yeah, working in London ad agencies, working for Mario Testino as a retoucher, and then as a photographer, because I actually always wanted to be a photographer, but I went into layouts and graphic design and stuff like that, because that was like the route that I could go down at the time. Yeah, so here we are now.
Greg is still a photographer.
Yeah.
And he also does some short form stuff. So that was pretty cool. A few years ago, you did some short form stuff.
Yeah, so I was running my group coaching program, doing coaching. I'd done my group coaching program, Brand Your Expertise Online, for about 6 years. And I wanted to move into more agency model. And, you know, I'd had the social media agency and doing the websites, and then I wanted to move into doing more of that again. But I saw this gap in the market of the need. And this was about 2.5 years ago when the short form videos had just become so popular. So I created something called Content Collab, where we collaborate with the business owner who's going to record videos, or we can take their podcasts or their Zoom sessions or whatever and turn them into short form videos. And that I put out, I didn't even have a sales page for it. I just put it out there, and I think I got 5 clients off the bat for that. And then it just morphed into, can you, you know, do a full ClickUp build for me? Can you help me with my project management, grow my team? And that's where I morphed into the COO type role, where I do that for people.
It was quite an interesting period for you, because you'd come from doing your own thing for so long and with your own brand on the coaching side. I mean, Chanel's an incredible coach. Many of our clients actually come out of your coaching program from years ago that we still work with. Some of them, you were their first coach, which is crazy. And now they're these huge.
Yeah, like my claim to fame is being one of Lisa Johnson's first coach. And I have a little testimonial video from her where she's saying, Chanel taught me how to launch, which was pretty cool.
Now she's like a launch queen.
£2 million launches. So that's pretty good. We've also had clients who have built up their businesses, created certification programs, created group programs, and we've had a client who's even done an exit where she sold her business for a life-changing amount of money. Like, she's been able to sell her business, and we also support the businesses going forward where there is an exit like that. So that's also
exactly. So Flip, we come with a lot of experience. Like from my side, I've had quite different experience as well. It wasn't like a straight line, right, to where I am now.
Also having your own business.
Exactly. So I started a brick and mortar business years and years ago, and it was a bit of a risque business. It was Essential Boutique for Women, which was quite controversial back in those days in South Africa.
Like, for those of you in the UK, it's like the Ann Summers of South Africa.
Exactly. And because I'm me and I don't like doing things badly, I always strive to excel. My business partner, Hilda, and myself, we won like a local retailer of the year when we'd been open for 9 months, which was huge news because, you know, we were not a traditional business. And we went on to franchise the business. There were 7 branches, I think, by the time we sold the business. It was incredibly successful. We were on, for the SAFers who may be listening, we were on Carte Blanche twice, both positive stories, not negative exposés. So Carte Blanche is a bit like, what would you call it? Almost like a mini 60 Minutes or like an actuarial show. And they used to do a lot of expose type stuff. And yeah, we were on twice and was quite awesome. There's not a lot of people that can say they've had that experience. And then I sold it. So I've had the experience of building something, franchising something, having a brick and mortar, selling it, exiting it successfully. So that's amazing. So this client of ours we spoke about now who exited her business, I mean, there was some quasi coaching and hand holding going on. And I'd sort of said to her, like, make sure look at these things and prepare yourself for these things, you know, things that I had gone through in exiting my business. And then I had always had an interest. I've always been a gadget girl, always been a tech girl. I've always been interested in anything tech. So I actually started web design way back when in Notepad by hand coding it. And I used to build websites. So when it was in the early, early days. And when I had that brick and mortar was the first time I dabbled in WordPress, which was also incredibly new. I've always been an early adopter. And because I'm creative, which I never thought I was in school, ironically, because I'm creative, I was naturally just always wanting to do that, do websites, etc. And when I exited that brick and mortar business, I was like, what am I going to do? And I was like trying to get a corporate job. And then my now husband, we weren't married then, he was working on the beachfront in the town where we were working, and he popped in to have lunch, and we had lunch together. And he was like, why are you looking for a corporate job? This is so cool. Like, I can always just come up home. We can have lunch together if you're working at home. And I was like, why am I trying to get a corporate job? Like, duh. Like, why am I doing that? And so I decided, let me just do websites, you know. And because I had a network from the previous business, when I went to the first business meeting, business networking meeting, and said to people, so this is how it went down. I literally went 1 month. It was a monthly meeting. I went the 1 month and said, big news, we're selling the bedroom. And everyone was like, oh, can't believe it. Because it was like, you know, that was my baby. Literally, it was like me in a bottle. And then the next month I went to the meeting and everyone was like, what are you doing? And I was like, hey, I'm here. No idea what I'm doing. I'm taking some time off. I'm going to buy a camera. Maybe going to do some photography stuff, maybe some dance lessons. That's literally what I said. And then the next month I went to the meeting and said, hey guys, I'm doing websites. So that's the thing, right? If you're that manifestor generator, kind of serial entrepreneur kind of personality, you think when you sell your business, you want to take time off and do nothing, but you actually don't have the ability. You just aren't wired that. My brain is not wired that way to be able to like, stretch, maybe read a book. Like my brain, that's like hell. Like I can do that for a couple of hours or a weekend or like maybe 8 days. And then I'm itching, like I want to be doing something, you know. So then I went back to websites and that's been the journey since then. But Chanel was actually instrumental in where that's taken me. Because when I started, it was a local business, local websites, small, on the pimple, the arse end of South Africa, earning next to nothing. I mean, I think I was charging the equivalent of $300 for a whole website in those days. And then with a lot of coaching and handholding from Chanel, she was like, you need to change what you're doing. You need to put your face on your brand. You need to look internationally. And the rest, as they say, is history.
At that time, you were charging in rand. So a lot of the people that we've worked with in South Africa, we've helped them to be able to leverage the currency here. So to be able to charge in dollars but live in South Africa, so to leverage that currency. Leverage is a theme of ours.
We like the word leverage.
Yes. And then what we had started doing was working with a lot of coaches who wanted to create their course hubs and create their funnels. And these are bigger brands and bigger websites. A couple of the clients of mine, we flew out to the Seychelles and to Bali and Lombok to actually film and create the whole brand, like the entire brand from start to finish with them, and then build the website and the course hubs and everything like that. And talking about, you know, features, one of my clients had featured me in Forbes because she was a Forbes contributor at the time. So I had a Forbes article all about that trip to the Seychelles that I did with one of my other clients. So that was quite nice to have a feature like that. And then she turned into a client of mine.
we've walked a long road together. Yeah. And one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast, right, is because we feel like there's a unique view that we share. And coming from having built our own businesses, a lot of CEOs, a lot of business owners, they only ever build their own businesses. They're not necessarily service providers like we are also, and they don't benefit from working on other teams, right? And so we've got quite an interesting perspective because we both are successful business people in our own right, but we also do offer these kind of services and offers to people where we come into their businesses and into their teams. And you get a really different perspective, not only because you are working in other people's teams effectively, but also different industries, different kinds of businesses, working with men, working with women, working with different personality types. And we often, because we're a sort of a step removed, we can see these trends through the life cycle of a business. And we see it again, and we see it again, and we see it again. And so our Telegram chats are often, we've reached the stage.
We can definitely see the patterns that are happening on teams, the dynamics in teams, the things that are happening with the owners of the business. And it's things that we identify. You also talked about some personality profiling work that you'd done when you were at the bedroom. Yeah. And actually the lady who did that, she ended up doing my group program as well.
We should get her on as a speaker on one of these episodes. She's brilliant.
Yeah, for sure. I also did the Kolbe test with a team. And that was really interesting because what you start to realize is that different people are wired in a different way. And so the way that you need to speak to people when they are a certain profile versus you is totally different. So when you understand what the CEO is, what the different team members are, you understand why they speak the way they do or why they communicate the way they do, and how they get work done can be different. So there's nothing wrong necessarily with the way that different people do it, but you need to understand what their profiles are and why they're doing it that way.
So this was quite an interesting period for Chanel, because this happened about 2.5 years ago when she kind of transitioned back to also working on teams and doing this kind of fractional COO work. And she hadn't done it in a long time. So it was quite there were some rocky months there. And a lot of that came down to like team dynamics and communication styles, etc. And so I remember trying to coach you through some of that stuff on Telegram. But when they brought her in and did that Kolbe testing, that was like the real turning point for you on that team.
Yeah.
When you understood that more and you had everybody else's profiles. That is so essential. That alone is like such a massive skill. That's something I learned during the bedroom, during that brick and mortar business. And it was Karen that did that training with us, in fact, in our business. And it was absolutely invaluable. And I've used that literally every day of my life, in my personal life and in my business life since then, because it's vital. Like, I don't know how people do business without that knowledge.
Because so much of how your team runs and your business, even if you only have one other team member, you have to understand that person and why they are wired the way they are and why they do the work the way that they do
The way they do, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And why what you're saying is not landing the way you think it should have landed. It doesn't make sense until you understand those nuances. So we said this in the previous recording, but I'm going to repeat it. We were saying that we are both quite empath. And I think that's a huge thing as well, is that we feel a lot of ownership and care and love in the brands and with the businesses and the teams that we're working on and in. Like, I joke often and I say to people, every website I'm working on, it's like, oh my God, this is my favorite. This is the most beautiful one I've ever done. This, I absolutely love it. And it's like that for me with every project that I work on. And I think we bring that to teams. But I don't think it's common. I think we're weird.
Yeah. When I come in as fractional COO, I am running the business as I would run my own business. You know, I'm not just there to tick tasks off and move along and track hours and charge by the hour. It's totally different because I'm passionate about it, the same as you. We care about the business and the business owner and all the team who are reliant on this, all their team and their family and their mortgages and everything. Everybody is reliant on that business. And at the end of the day, it's the marketing and sales that matters the most.
The engine. Yeah. You've got to have the engine running.
Yeah, and you've got to care about the sales, like, because if you don't care about the sales and the team doesn't care about the sales, there's going to be no business if the sales can't maintain the team and the cost of running the business.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that, because we come on to these teams, and for some of my clients I've worked with on the current teams for 10 years. And so we've watched a life cycle, right, of the business. For some of them, I was the developer of the first sales page of their first offer that they ever did, and now they're these humongous seven-figure businesses or whatever. And so you get to watch someone grow. You also grow as your client's growing, so you're growing with your client, because now suddenly they have more needs and you naturally just flow with them. So that's really awesome. It's an interesting perspective. But we also, because we get to this life cycle with all the teams, we definitely do see trends. Today's episode, what we wanted to touch on, besides who we are, is that one trend that we see all the time, and that's the cost of hiring cheap labor, basically, because we see that all the time.
Yeah, I think somebody is telling people that they should just go and hire the cheapest team that you can, get cheap team members.
Yeah.
And that's so easy to just find them on Fiverr and Upwork and whatever. But what we found is that it just takes so much training. It takes a lot of time. So if you are going to go down that route of getting, like they say, cheaper team member or low cost resource, you're going to have to spend a lot of either your time or one of your higher levels team members' time to train them and to also have that review process in place, because a lot of times they'll make mistakes and you don't even know. And so it's quite scary when you think of people that have team but don't have someone, like, let's say on our level, who can be that check. Then these people are just creating stuff and it's all broken in the back end. Nobody even knows.
Yeah. But also it becomes a juggernaut, right? This is what typically happens over and over again. So business starts nice and lean. Lean team, nice and nimble, agile. And then something starts selling, something becomes hot, and now we're scaling the business. Now there's small things that were handleable, maybe support questions or something that were not a big deal before. But now, because you're scaling the business and there's just so many more people coming through the business, now suddenly you've got, let's use support tickets as an example, you've got all these support tickets coming into the system and you need somebody to actually answer them. So of course, naturally you go, let's just get a cheap resource. So you get a cheap resource, that resource is then answering those questions. Let me answer these questions. And you scale some more. Oh, we need another one. Let's get this person on. Let's answer the questions. And so it becomes like, it's as you scale, it's just getting to be a bigger and bigger problem. And you're just throwing more and more at the problem. It's a symptom-based kind of model, right? So this is a symptom in our business and we're treating the symptom. We're just going to throw more medicine down its throat. We're not going to look at the root cause. We're not going to solve the problem and make it go away so we can keep the business nice and lean. We're just going to keep throwing resources, because that's what you're thinking. Like, as the business owner, you're just like, I need these to go away. What am I going to do? I'm going to put in another cheap resource there. And before you know it, you've got a team of 25 people. You actually don't know what they're doing. And then exactly like you were saying, like that you almost become the bottleneck, because somebody's got to review this stuff. For a lot of our clients, they're very A-type, very much want to hold control. They don't necessarily want to let go. If they haven't got that COO in place yet or somebody that can manage processes for them, they're trying to review everything themselves and then they're a bottleneck. And then it all starts feeling very heavy. And energy is to that thing. Like, a lot of the energy is going there. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about energy, because that's, like, without being too woo-woo, that's huge, right?
Yeah. We were actually talking about this before, because this one project or this maybe one client or this thing is taking up a lot of energy, as in I'm thinking about it a lot, I'm trying to troubleshoot. And then if you are juggling a few clients, you have to be so careful about protecting your energy and what percentage of it is going there. As we were chatting about this that evening, I saw a Facebook Live pop up, and I was just saying how I hardly ever watch Facebook Lives anymore, but this one popped up and, oh, this is what she was talking about. I was like, we were just talking about this. And she was talking about relationships, and it can be relationships in business. It could be a client. It could be a team member. It could be personal relationships. So what's happening with your partner or with your parents or with whatever. So all these different relationships that we have, because that's what life and business is, actually.
It's as a woman, right? So this Facebook Live we were watching, she was saying that that's the way we're wired as women. Like, we are wired to prioritize relationships and thinking about relationships as women. And so without even being conscious of it, so much of your energy is being directed there based on what's happening in your business relationships, personal relationships, whatever the case is. And so we're very protective. We both are, I think. Like, I'm super protective of my energy. I don't do negativity. I can't do it.
And that's something that you say a lot, is this is derailing me. And that can happen anyone, like we have our own businesses as well, but if it's happening to the CEO on a company, that will trickle down to the rest of the team.
100% of the email. Yeah. Push stinks from the head down. That's the same. Yeah.
So I think we all have to be aware of that, of like, where are there relationships in the business that are draining the energy, as in not that the person is necessarily the drainer or whatever, but it's how much time are you spending thinking and ruminating and troubleshooting and da-da-da. And she was saying in the live, that amount of thinking, of that bubble of thinking, it's going to actually require you to eat more and drink more, because it's using up that energy. Yeah, it uses that. And then you're going to feel so depleted that there's nothing left. So you can't then go and create for your own stuff. Or like you were saying as well, like a lot of the time, what happens in business can then affect your family life.
Totally. So Chanel and I are both pretty lucky. We're in happy, stable, most of the time, relationships. But I find my business relationships have more of a tendency to affect my personal. So that's why I'm so protective of my energy and my time in business, because it does absolutely affect my family. Because I'm committed, because I'm empath, because I have that sense of ownership that we were talking about earlier. You know, if I'm on your team, I'm like invested, you know, I give a shit. Okay.
It may as well be your own business that you help them run. Yeah.
And I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, right? So it's great for our clients. I think it's fantastic for our clients. I think it can be a pain sometimes when we feel passionately about something and we you know, bat things back. I'm sure that can be quite painful, but most of our clients appreciate it. But it can also be like a curse, right? Because exactly like you touched on it earlier, where you were saying, like, I often say something will derail me. Chanel, in your case especially, you haven't done nearly enough in your business in the last 2.5 years, because so much of your energy has been invested in the client projects that you've been working on over the last 2.5 years. So when we say we've spoken about doing something together, we've been speaking about doing something together for years. This is like, huge, right?
Yeah. People have noticed that I am not, I mean, I was prolific on social media.
Not as active.
Facebook lives, I had my Facebook group, my Instagram, my Facebook, it was pretty prolific. And I mean, I was one of those first people that used to do live streams on Periscope.
Periscope.
Before there was a Facebook Live.
Crazy.
So, you know, what Brooke was talking about were personal life things as well. I've had a lot of death in the family.
Yeah.
You know, being in Bali and getting a phone call that my mother-in-law had passed away. Like when we were there working and we then had to fly back a week later. And yeah, and there's also been recently my mom has come to live with us because she's got dementia and it's really far along.
Big life stuff. It's huge life.
So this has obviously taken a huge amount of my energy, although I've hired a carer, which is great, but she's not here 24/7. You just don't know what people are going through personally as well. I think obviously we work in this social
profile,
coaches and personal brands, but people have gone through a lot of shit in the last few years, I think, you know, especially in like the last 4 years, 3 or 4 years, have been pretty... dramatic.
No, I mean, for us as deciding to leave South Africa, moving to Mauritius, like big life changing stuff.
Yeah.
And there's always stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that like by the time you know that there's always stuff.
Yeah, when you're 40 plus, there's this like weird place and no one really prepares you for this. But you're gonna be looking after your children and looking after parents or grandparents at the same time, and you're still heavily building your business or your career. So you're doing all these things, the kids are at school, like there's so much going on in this
generation.
I think so.
I agree with that. Mm. Okay, let's bring this lesson home. Let's talk about this ticking tasks trend that we see and the problems with it. And the solutions for it, some solutions. So
yeah, so We've noticed that, you know, there's certain team members, and especially if you're going for, they call it the low cost resource, they're just going to come in and tick off the task, and there's going to be no thought behind it. So if the CEO is seeing shiny objects and my friend said this and I saw a podcast and let's just do this, let's just change this. What is the reason behind it? Who's your ideal client? Does it, the change make sense for them? But if they just put the task in, then you have VAs who will just go tick it off.
Yeah, because that's their role, because they're on an hourly rate. And wonderful, yes, there's a new project. Of course I can do it. Blah, 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 let me beaver away and get some hours. Thank you very much. It's not their role to question the task that you're giving them as the business owner. And I think what happens a lot of the time is the business owner assumes that that person that they're tasking it to is an expert in that area of whatever they're tasking. And that if there was a better way, whatever, whatever, they would recommend it. And they're just not at that level, and it's not their role. And they're not, why would they do themselves out of a job at the end of the day? Like, they're not going to improve a process to take away a whole bunch of tasks that they're busy invoicing for example, like a very silly example. But this is the difference between somebody who's on your team as a VA at a VA level and somebody that's on your team at a strategist level or a COO level. And I think sometimes CEOs forget that. And I think especially they think the secret is to grow more minions. That's how they solve their problems. They throw more low-cost resources at it, and then they just end up with a bigger engine, like treating more symptoms and not actually fixing anything that's broken. And I would say you almost need to invert that trend, right? So you actually don't want to have something that's bottom heavy. You kind of want to bring someone in at the top levels earlier, because they're going to prevent you from building this unnecessarily bottom heavy structure that's very energy sapping and toxic.
There's just so many things that can just be automated, or the process can be either streamlined. Looking at the process. And often when things are going wrong or balls are being dropped, it's the process, not the person. So look at the process.
But again, it's the level of the person. So they've just got this problem, and this, I'm at this level, so that's the solution I'm thinking of doing, you know. So, hello, Hans. So, they need to involve the higher level strategy person in the beginning before they task to the lower level people. Because at least if there was some oversight by somebody that's a strategist, your focus is like, hang on a second, there's been more than two of these. There's a problem we need to solve. The reason we do such awesome SOPs and systems is because if somebody asks me how to do something, you know, I record it. Because if one person asks me, somebody else is going to ask me, and I don't like doing the same thing two times ever. It's like a life policy of mine. So I just don't do it. So I record everything. And then if somebody goes, how do you do this? No problem. There's the link. There's the recording. That's how you do it. If there's anything that you're going to do more than two times in your business, you need to look at, can you automate it? That's my policy.
And then what we've also created for a few of our clients now is this team training vault with categories and everything like that, with all the videos, and then written SOPs from the transcripts as well that's created using AI.
With AI, with transcripts, like, how many
we're
times?
We're just loving AI right now.
Oh my God, we love it. Like, that's literally where I was going with this. How many times in the last few weeks have we said to each other, do you remember how long it used to take to do this? Now it's like, bing, bing, 5 seconds. Yeah. Like, this is something that used to take me 5 hours to do.
Yeah. We've both been embracing AI for all sorts of things. So we'll probably do an episode just on that.
Oh, totally. But, oh my gosh, a series. What do you mean one episode?
Exactly.
So I wanted to check my notes actually, and but that we've covered everything that we wanted to like talk about on this, the task ticker trap, you know, that these businesses end up in. I mean, we've said it's all about symptom. Just medicate the symptom, not, you know, do the root cause. So we want to fix the root cause, okay? And we've also touched on the fact that these team members are basically incentivized to either keep the problem as bad as it is or make the problem even worse. That's the reality, because you're paying them an hourly rate or on a retainer or whatever to do these tasks.
I don't think it's a conscious thing. I don't think they're like, oh, let me just make this as bad as possible. Yeah, but they're not going to think about how it could be done better. So every now and again, if you have a coach or if you have a COO or if you have a tech superstar on your team, do a consultation with them and just say, these are the things the team's working on. Could we be doing it better? Actually ask people.
Like you almost need to do a quarterly review. Yeah. That would be such a good thing for all CEOs to take on, because these things, they're sneaky, right? Like they sort of sneak in and grow into bigger things within your business. And if you're not regularly going, hang on a second, let's just move the couches and check for those dust bunnies, it's just going to become ugly and messy.
And I've called it a seven-figure systems audit in the past because it is the people that are around that $700,000-$800,000 a year kind of mark, and they're wanting to get to the seven-figure mark. But it seems like they're at that point, they've hired more people and there's more things going on, and that's where it starts to get a bit.
So those lower level team members, they often just don't know what they don't know. So exactly like you were saying, it's not that it's intentional or malicious or any of that stuff. It's just that they don't have the experience and the knowledge that your higher level strategy type person has had. They don't have the insights, and so they just don't even know what problem they're solving. So, I mean, there's a silly analogy, but like, let's say you take your car for a service. So you phone around and you go, I'm going to take my car to the cheapest person I can find. It's a guy that's working out of his garage on the corner there, and he's only a third of the price. Winning. And you go and you service your car, and he services the car perfectly, right? So we change the spark plugs, change the oil, whatever. But it's not his job to tell you that, you know, your transmission's about to fail. Whereas if you went to the more expensive, experienced mechanic on the corner, they would do your service exactly the same. And then they would say, oh, Chanel, just so you know, you've probably got another 20 or 30,000 Ks to go before something potentially goes quite majorly wrong. You may want to keep an eye on this. And they save you the cost of seizing your engine. You know, so it's like that low cost resource might be low cost now, but down the line, you're replacing a car.
Yeah. And my husband he's in charge of our car. We have a lovely Jeep. We love it. But he will buy special oil. He'll buy the oil online and he takes that oil, because most of the people will just use standard oil. And if you use this oil, your engine will last longer.
That much longer.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, this is a bit like what we do on these audits, right? So we come in and say, okay, this is working, but just so you know, if you change this, it might actually work better, might last you longer. You might not have to redo this in a year, which you're probably going to have to do if you stay with the way you are. We spoke about conducting your task audit. So definitely getting in somebody, or just internally yourself, just being really like trying to raise yourself above out of your business and look down on it if you can, and look at things like at least know what your team is spending time on. If you have a big team, energy is going towards that. Yeah. At the very least, you need some kind of time tracking or task tracking. You need some understanding of where those hours are going. And also where your hours are going. The CEO desperately needs to do this themselves, right? A lot of the time. Because they don't appreciate how much time and energy is going into some of the things that they are going into. And that's often when we see, and this is very common at this stage as well, where the CEOs get resentful of their business and their team. How many times have we seen that?
Yeah, that happens a lot, especially if... yeah, they're paying out more, and then they end up feeling like they're working more, and they're not quite sure if everybody's working on things that actually move the needle. We've done this with one of our clients last year, where we really looked at the time tracking and looked at the rates per hour per team member, and then put it into the projects. And you can do this with the time tracking softwares that you want to go for, because in the different tiers of the time tracking software, you can actually put in everyone's tracking for a project. Let's say it's a podcast, or let's say it's a launch, or let's say it's an evergreen funnel, whatever that project is. You've got all different team members working on it. They are working at different rates per hour, and then the time tracking can actually bring it in for that project and give you a monthly costing. So that's really good to have your eyes on. And something that I've done, I've been offboarding a client who I have been working as fractional COO for. And what we've done is exactly what you said, also another task audit. So what we got to in the point in her business with rehauling her entire ClickUp, looking at all the tasks, making sure one main team member has ownership over a task and not tasking three people on one task because then no one actually knows who's supposed to be doing what. Tasking back and forth is really important. Task it back and forth and use an approvals process with the statuses in ClickUp or whatever you're using, so that each person knows when they are owning that task and what they're supposed to be doing, including when it's for review or for approval, when it goes to like COO or CEO, then everybody knows when they're supposed to be doing their thing. The other thing that's been game changing for this one client that I've worked with, and it actually allowed her to go on a 3-month sabbatical with her business still running, her not having to do anything, her podcast going out, her social media going out, her email marketing still going out. And yes, revenue dropped, but she planned for it. And she has other, she's taken money and income from her business and she's invested it elsewhere, like in Airbnb, Bitcoin, and stock market investments. So she's been able to take a 3-month sabbatical, but we kept the team going and all the team and tech costs were still covered. Everything still went out. But what we did was we have turned, I'd say 80 to 90% of all the tasks in her business are recurring tasks now. So I've created an HQ area with recurring tasks. And every time a new task gets created, we go, is this actually something that needs to be done recurring? And does it need to happen daily, monthly, weekly, quarterly, annually? And what we did in the review when I have been doing my offboarding is, because I'm not even needed that much anymore because we've basically...
You said your job so bloody well.
So we've set up, ClickUp is now the project manager because we've spent 2 years figuring out what the tasks are, what the recurring tasks are, like cleanup tasks, housekeeping, stats, marketing, social media. What are all the tasks that have to be done? How often do they have to be set as recurring? And they're all there, like with each team member, with different views. We can view it by, is this client care? Is this marketing? Is this admin? Or you can view it by which team member. And then we sat together on an offboarding call and did a cleanup. We did an audit. And I've actually got a column for auditing the tasks as well. And then you can say, am I keeping this? Is this just a nice to have? Is this absolutely like we cannot get rid of it, or is this one we can actually just delete? Or when you're doing that, you can go, you know what, isn't there a way to automate this? So exactly. You can have an audit, like a custom field,
so
or a
that audit. Is what needs to happen in every business on a quarterly basis, because just think of the amount of waste that accumulates over a quarter in a business, not only of energy. I mean, energy, you've got to think about the energy, but money as well, like wasted time, money, energy on stuff that just accumulates. And if you don't actually do that audit and get that, I do a big one in December. I take a month off generally, pretty much every year from about mid-December to at least mid-Jan, sometimes the end of Jan. I'm lucky I can do that. That's like really when I focus on any big projects I want to do for me. right? And one of the things I do is an audit. And I do an audit of, I mean, stupid stuff, right? Like subscriptions. And then when you go in and you look at all these things and you're like, I don't even use that. And you unsubscribe to like $300 a month worth of crap. Like, yep. That you've just, over the course of the last year, been subscribing to. It feels so good when you've done it. Like, it just feels like clean, you know? It's like clean eating, healthy living. Yep. Clean eating for your business.
Carnivore. Keto. Carnivore. That'll be another episode.
That's another episode for sure. Right. Mm. So have we covered everything we need to cover for this task ticking?
I think so.
Amazing. We did it, chick.
We did it. And we recorded it this time.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, amazing. We just, talk about tech fails anyway. It makes a good story, right?
Yeah, exactly. We did that whole thing and then we had to do the entire thing again. So don't give up. Because if you're trying to record a webinar or a training, I can tell you now that this is not the first time that either of us recorded something and not hit record.
Oh, like, it drives me wild. Know
better. Like, of everyone, you should know better.
Especially me, who hates doing anything two times over. It's one of my pet peeves. But anyway, we've managed to keep this in an hour. I'm actually pretty impressed. Wow. Yeah, might have even been better the second time around.
I think it was. I think so. We had to warm ourselves up.
Yeah, there you go. We got the wiggles out. It is raining. I'm looking out my door and it's raining. We are doing rain dances all over Mauritius for rain. It's been the driest summer ever. We are under water restrictions at the moment. The dams are all empty, empty, empty. Mm. So there's some glorious rain. Let's hope it lasts a few days.
It's raining here as well. And there's good surf. So Craig's surfing and Sahara started surfing. This summer was pivotal for her. So she has now got amazing. That stoke of surfing. So she's probably going to want to go for a surf.
So exciting. I can't wait for Shazi to do that. Okay, let's talk about some possible upcoming episodes. We've been brainstorming. I mean, there's so much.
If anyone has questions for us, then let us know.
Let us know what topics, what burning questions you have. You know, maybe we need to do an episode on turning your business international. Brick and mortar versus online. You know,
living differently, living an extraordinary life.
Digital, you know, living lifestyle vibes.
When we left the UK, we lived in the UK for 12 years. And I wanted to be walking distance to the beach. That was one of the main things that I wanted. We moved to the Caribbean. That was in 2012. And since then, we have lived walking distance. So long may that continue. These businesses we do, the businesses that we help people create, it's because they want to live a different type of life. They don't want to be stuck in corporate, living in a city. Like people, they want to be able to have, and it sounds cliche, freedom. Yeah. To live anywhere, work whenever you want, take the morning off and go have brunch.
That was one of the things we said when we moved to Mauritius. I mean, we live in the most beautiful villa. We sat down, Vince and I, before we moved, and we said, this is what's important to us. This is what makes us happy. And we kind of manifested this, as it were. And then one of the things we said we wanted to do when we moved to here was have a better life balance, have more work-life balance, be healthier, do more activities. Thank goodness we have done that.
I feel like we still live in the Caribbean, except if we want to, we can drive further.
Yeah.
We used to live on an island, the Turks and Caicos Providenciales, and it was half an hour this way and 10 minutes this way. There was one road where you could see the beach on both sides. Like
we're about 70 minutes from any one point of Mauritius to the other point. So it always amuses me because when people come here, like I've had a lot of clients come here as well. I've got more clients coming this year, by the way. They come on holiday in Mauritius and then they're like, oh, I don't know if we'll be able to see you. Like, we're on this side of the island. Check. It's like 65 minutes, one end to the other. I will make a plan to come and see you.
Actually, I thought it was a bit bigger than that. Okay, good. It's good to know. I couldn't really remember. We photographed a wedding at the Hilton in Mauritius. And I also went there when I was younger, when my mom and dad were still married, like that long ago.
Oh, wow.
So I've been there twice. Obviously, would love to come back. We need to do maybe a Mauritius retreat or something.
So. That would be great. That'll be amazing.
A
new
barefoot luxe retreat in Mauritius.
Indeed. That sounds amazing. Yeah. With a carnival twist. Let's call it. And looking forward to chatting to you all in episode 2.
Yes. Tune in, subscribe. Hit subscribe, do all
those things.